Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Fortis Comic News, episode 338. I am one of your hosts, Chris, alongside my co-hoster, Mike. What's going on, Mike?
Nothing, man. Just hanging out. Did you watch the Bills play at 9:30 this morning?
Yeah, up until our recording time, I was watching it, yeah.
Yeah. I just think it's funny the bars open early so people can have drinks while they're watching football.
It's funny because before I get into it, we have an interview today.
Yes, we do. Sorry. Jerry Carito will be on. We're going to talk about Samurai Cicada, and we're looking forward to that. But yeah.
So over here in Western New York, this would be some prime house owning talk we can do here. Mm-hmm. Had to drive to the dump to get rid of all my garbage and recycling. Mm-hmm. And normally I wake up early and nobody's there. Mm-hmm. Well, today everybody was there because the Bills are on at 9:30.
So they're trying to get it done before that. Yeah, it's amazing. Like if you're in New York, especially Western New York, where you are, you can like if you just time grocery shopping when the Bills are playing, it's like a barren wasteland.
Oh, I used to work for local legend Wegmans.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you knew exactly when the Bills game was on because about a half an hour before, the place was a ghost town.
Yeah.
Oh, fucking yeah. Ghost town.
Nobody goes shopping.
Yeah. It was, yeah. It's amazing.
Yep. It's great when you're not a Bills fan. You need to go grocery shopping during football season. It kind of controls the town.
And then the fact that I was up a little late because the Phillies game was on. Mm. I was watching that and playing Wargroove 2 that finally came out, Mike.
Nice. Yeah, I did play that at PAX. I did see it came out. You're liking it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's I love that type of game. I mean, Advanced Wars is one of my favorite games ever. And this is kind of, it's funny because Advanced Wars came out with that remake earlier in the year. Mm-hmm. And I played it and I loved it and it's great. But Wargroove improved on it so much, the first one, that it was almost tough to play because it was like, oh, like it doesn't have this feature that Wargroove like improved on and all this. And now Wargroove 2 does even more to improve on it. So it's I love it. It's great.
I'm just not very good at that game. I played their Chucklefish came out with the Wild Frost game a while ago. That game's really good. I was playing that one, but also really hard.
Well, and then as if it wasn't enough, like right up my alley, they added a new race in this game, and it's they're supposed to be mice, but they look like squirrels, if you ask me.
Oh, that's awesome.
But they're mice, and then all of their cavaliers. So you have like the cavalier character who rides on horses. Ride on cats.
That's amazing. All right, I guess I'll put it on my wish list when it goes on sale. There's so many games out right now. There's so many shows to watch. It's like everything happens in the fall.
Yeah. I've been trying to play through Sea of Stars. I really want to play that game WrestleQuest that Skybound put out.
Yeah, WrestleQuest looks awesome.
Yeah. And Spider-Man's around the corner. Spider-Man 2.
Yeah. And then I saw Lords of the Fallen. Somebody was playing that on Twitch. And I'm like, shit, that already comes out next week. Because that was a game I wanted to get on day one. So it's like, I just don't have time. And then we got New York Comic Con next weekend.
Yeah, and Detective Pikachu Returns. That came out. Yeah. So
it's crazy.
Yeah. There's not a ton of news this week, everybody. Cause as Mike just said, New York Comic Con's next week.
Yeah. So it's like all's quiet, on the comic news front, but hopefully we'll see some good stuff happen in New York Comic Con.
I'm excited. I'm really excited. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll be down in Westchester County for a wedding that like 3 or 4 days that Comic Con is going on.
You'll get the text from me while you're in the wedding. It'll just be like, they finally did it. They announced Ron.
Yeah. Well, no, but I'll be like within driving distance to New York City, maybe 30 to 40 minutes and I'm like, should I just make a trip down? But then, you know, you spend like 5 hours in line trying to get into the place. So it never work out. But
I don't think I told you this, but yeah, so I've been asked multiple times if we're going to New York. Mm-hmm. And I'd say no, like because of both of our situation, we haven't done cons this year.
Right.
But I was also offered tickets to a con in Sacramento, California.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Interesting.
and it turned them down, obviously. But
yeah, it's a little harder to get out there. Yeah, we need to get back at some cons. Really, the only, I mean, I don't even go to like Comic Cons to like walk around anymore, but I should. I mean, yeah, there should be more going on within the next year, but
I think next year, I want to go back to TurfCon because that's a fun one, and I want to take you to it because I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I got to go to that one.
And I really, really want to do Baltimore.
Yeah. I've always wanted to visit Baltimore.
Yeah, I think that would be a fun one to do. So
There's a lot of good people at Baltimore.
Yeah, we'll put that on our list, Mike. We'll talk about it more in a year. But yeah, those are two on my to-do list for next year. We'll see about any others. Usually those are, a lot of them are last minute because smaller cons, you know, they're hard to plan out.
Yeah. Problem for me is they don't give you enough vacation time in the US, man. It sucks. I need more. Yeah. And I have like 3 weddings next year already. I'm like, this shit's got to stop. Like, people need to stop having weddings. One of them's my sister's. So, I will definitely be excited for that one. But other than that, you know, they're my friends. They don't need to get married, whatever. Just chill. Stop occupying all my vacation time.
We don't got to worry about me, Mike. So
no. But you know,
it's a courthouse in town. That's fine.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. Yeah. No, I should be lucky though. Most of the weddings I have to go to are within New York, but you know, then you take time off for like bachelor parties and stuff like that. It's like, I wish we started with like 5 weeks vacation, like people in Europe get, you know, that'd be ideal, but unfortunately.
Yeah, I was talking to my parents about it because they want me to come down to Florida again. Mm-hmm. I was actually thinking about, I was looking at it, I was like, oh, I could plan out again, like go to MegaCon again, because that was a blast.
Yeah.
If you're down in Florida, like near Orlando, MegaCon is a blast.
Yeah.
But I just, you know, I got to save it for, if I want to do Baltimore, it's going to have to be like a 4 or 5 day trip.
Right.
And then the way my time off works, it's all kind of clumped together. So
yeah. Yeah.
If I get sick again or something, you know, I got to have days saved up. So
right. You got to save them all up and then use them. Yeah. Yep. Such is life in the capitalist system. Anyways, we're here to try to ignore that shit. TV stuff, The Boys Gen V episode 4 came out. I watched about 20 minutes of it, actually just before we started recording, because we had to record a little early today. But the first 15 minutes, I will say, there's a character that shows up. We've been waiting for, 3 seasons of The Boys, and we finally get Tech Knight. And he he is like, he's Tony Stark with the asshole like turned up even more, you know what I mean? And the fact of like how he behaves, but the way they introduce him is like, he has a TV show on Vought Plus and it's basically unsolved mysteries. So he's like the unsolved mysteries guy.
Oh jeez.
Because he's like very, you know, he has a reputation for like torturing and interrogating people and like getting information from them and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So naturally they make him the host of like a show like that. So it's interesting. I want to see him in his armor. So hopefully we get to see him in that at some point.
Yeah. I wonder if that's a setup for like, here he is. He's excited. And then in season 4, The Boys, we get the real Tech Knight.
Yeah. Part of the like actual, you know, see characters cross over. Hey, you know what it means, Chris, that we don't need to waste time introducing him in The Boys, which is great, right? So,
I mean, that's what a good spinoff should do beyond being a good show on its own. It should introduce characters that we see in the main thing to kind of speed along the storytelling in the main show. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So,
agreed.
Yeah, so. I hope that's what they do.
Yeah, I'm only about 15 minutes in, but it's a good episode so far. Yeah, this hit, and I completely forgot about it. Loki season 2 is out now, episode 1. Have not watched it yet. Did you watch it?
Oh yeah, I loved it.
Oh nice.
It was a really great intro. We get it takes place right after Loki season 1. He comes back to the TVA. He's doing his time slipping thing where he like goes back and forth through time inside the TVA, which is supposed to be impossible. So him and Owen Wilson, I forget his character's name.
Mm-hmm.
But they're trying to figure out how it's happening. So they go down to this like sub basement where no one goes.
Okay.
And it's that dude from
Short Round.
Yeah. Short Round.
Yeah.
He was in that movie you liked.
Yes. About time travel. All was. Yeah.
Yeah. He's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Great.
He steals the episode with his character. He just does such a great job. And he's basically the guy that controls the apparatus that creates the timeline.
Okay.
And so he has the plan to try to save Loki. And won't spoil too much, but basically all the branching timelines, so all the what if, everything that's going on in the MCU is overloading the machine because it's only meant to have one timeline. And as we learned in season one of Loki, like the TVA is to destroy the other branches so that there can be one sacred timeline and all this. And then we get kind of that the female Loki, Sylvie, is like somehow responsible for all of this due to her actions. So it was, yeah, it's a really good intro to the season. It held up that, like, what Loki season one was, although I thought Loki season one had flaws, and I think a lot of that was due to COVID at the time, how they shot it and everything, but it held up that feeling of that season. So I think we're due for a really good show here. I definitely recommend it if you like season one of Loki. I think you're gonna love this episode.
No mention of Kang though, huh?
There is mention of Kang a few times.
Okay.
Yeah, because like he slips back in time at one point and they're trying to figure out, or no, he comes back to the present after going back in time.
Mm-hmm.
And when he gets there, he reveals to them like this is who's behind it. And he does a thing and shows like an image of him. It's like, it's been him the whole time, and it freaks everybody out. So like, yeah, Kang's mentioned.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Star Wars Ahsoka episode 8, Chris, the final episode.
Yeah, the final episode. I'll say all in all, it was a really good ending. Definitely, I mean, it sets up Thrawn's return to Star Wars. That's kind of where the episode ends, with a great battle sequence and everything.
Of course.
Spoilers, everybody, but Ahsoka and Sabine are stuck in that other galaxy right now, but they're able to get Ezra back to what is called Galaxy Prime. Where he gets to meet up with the original members of the Rebels.
Cool.
So definitely sets up some sort of season two.
Mm-hmm.
If not, just there needs to be... If Ahsoka's going to have anything to do with the battle against Thrawn, then there needs to be some sort of explanation of how she gets back.
Mm-hmm.
But if this was it for Ahsoka, I think I'd be okay with it. I loved how she ended, how... Her journey was to bring back Ezra and let him, because it makes sense that Ezra should be the one to take down Thrawn at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And her and Sabine getting to be alone on this planet just makes sense cosmically with the storytelling and everything. But I don't think that's how they're going to leave it. I think they're going to bring her back. We'll talk about the news on that in a minute. But there's another great sequence, too, where they show Ezra building a new lightsaber.
Mm-hmm.
And for longtime Rebel fans, it's a really heartwarming moment because he's going around trying to find specific pieces. Because inside of Ahsoka's ship, because we've learned over the season that Ahsoka's ship is an old Jedi council ship. And the robot that's with her used to train younglings and help... younglings build lightsabers and all this. So she has all these supplies from the Jedi Temple in it.
Cool.
And so he's building a lightsaber and you see him kind of mulling around trying to find the perfect parts and everything. And you think like, he's just trying to build this cool lightsaber, whatever. And he's trying to find the last part. Well, the robot helps him and goes, oh, he finds out like, oh, you were the apprentice of Kanan. And he pulls out this part and it was the last part that Ezra was looking for. And what you find out is Ezra was building basically a replica of Kanan's lightsaber. So now he has an identical lightsaber to what Kanan had during Star Wars Rebels, which was like a really heartwarming moment. Cool. And just a great like full circle moment for them. So
nice.
Yeah. All in all, awesome season, had its ups and downs, but I really loved it. I'm really glad that they did this, and I look forward to seeing where the story continues from here.
Yeah. And according to Deadline, they're saying conversations are happening. So maybe it's leaning more towards they will do a second season, but nothing locked in yet. So I mean, if it was well received, why not, right?
Yeah, people liked it. It is well received, and like I said, it just feels, even though I would be fine with Ahsoka ending here, it just mm-hmm. doesn't feel like how they want to end Ahsoka. So
right,
I could see another season where we spend like another, let's say, 8 episodes, and we spend like 3 or 4 of her and Sabine finding their way off this planet and then setting up the movie that I think is coming out in 2025.
Probably
that's going to end all of this Mandalorian Ahsoka stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm down for it. Dave Filoni is the truth. He is the man. He can do no wrong at this point. So
yep, he's doing it.
Let him take as much Star Wars as he wants, as far as I'm concerned.
Nice. Speaking of Rosario Dawson, I watched the new Haunted Mansion movie that's on Disney Plus now.
Oh, how is it?
It was really good. Definitely not for kids. There's some really creepy and like freaky parts where I'm like, this is kind of, you know, but definitely like a children watching this would not sleep. Also, there's a lot of like, it deals a lot with death and like grief. One of the main characters had like lost his wife early on and was like, is dealing with that. Also, Danny DeVito is absolutely hilarious. There's this moment where, like, speaking of death and grief, the man is like telling the story about like his wife dying and like all and how like she stopped to get ice cream and she like got in a car accident or something, and like everybody's like, oh my god, I'm so sorry, and Danny DeVito's just sitting there and he's like, huh, she must have had really bad cholesterol. Dude, I rewatched the scene like 5 times because like this moment was happening so long of like 5 minutes of this character like explaining like his like mourning his wife and like to the point where like, you know, people are crying watching this, and then he just comes in and like, huh.
Oh, I love that. That's some dark
dude,
ass
it's
humor.
It's some
man.
Dark humor, dude. And it's so it was very, very surprising. You know, it has ups and downs, but I think overall, and Jared Leto plays the villain. Which I'll tell you right now, if they didn't tell me that, the only time you ever see Jared Leto's face is like they show a picture of the villain before he was like ghoulish looking, because he has like a CGI face. He almost looks like the Grinch. He's got like a skull for a face. You never like see his face, and his voice is completely altered to where it does not sound like Jared Leto. So that was surprising. And then, oh my God. From Halloween, I can't think of her name right now. The main actress from Halloween, she was in Everything Everywhere All at Once.
I want to say, oh,
and she was in Halloween, the main actress. I keep wanting to say Jodie Foster. Anyways, I can't think of her name.
That's who I want to say, but when you said Everything All at Once, I'm thinking,
yeah, it's not. I'm gonna have to look it up now. But the cast, I mean, Rosario Dawson's in it. I don't know if there's anybody else that's famous. Jamie Lee Curtis. Jamie Lee Curtis is in it. She plays like a ridiculous, like psychic person. So it was really funny to see her like that. It was just a fun movie. Yeah. So it's on Disney Plus. I highly suggested it. But yeah, Danny DeVito makes it, dude. He goes to eat at Hibachi and he wears this like see-through raincoat and like hat. So he doesn't get like, you think it's because like he doesn't want to get like food all over him because they throw food at him. He's just like a funny character, just like his facial expressions. That's why I watch It's Always Sunny, is just for him, man. He's so good.
Yeah, that was a movie I kept seeing previews for, and I was like, this looks fun. I want to see it.
Yeah,
and then of course Rosario Dawson's on it, who I have a huge crush on. So I'm like, yeah, I need to see this.
Owen Wilson's really funny. He plays like a terrible priest.
Yeah, the cast is phenomenal, man.
He's like almost like, I'm gonna say a prayer. He's like, come on, God, give us a break. It's like, you think he's gonna say something really nice because he's a priest? He's like, no, he's just like really terrible at his job. It's good. It's really, I highly recommend it.
That's good to hear.
Yeah, and then I highly recommend this interview we have with Jerry Kurita. We're gonna talk about Samurai Cicada, and we'll see you all on the other side.
All right, everybody, we got another very special guest for you all. I want everybody to welcome to the show, Jeremy Kurita. Welcome, Jeremy.
It's Jerry.
Jerry. Gross. I wrote Jeremy in the header. It's Jerry.
You did. You did. I was going to let that go.
I'm going to look like an idiot on YouTube. It's going to be great. There you go.
That's fine.
That's good. It's more clicks. More clicks.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. Thanks for being here, Jerry Carita. especially for your first time. Wow, what a welcome. What a welcome we just gave you. You know, we don't script anything, clearly. So I appreciate you being here.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate you guys having me. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. It's your first time here, so we have to do the annoying thing of putting you through the gauntlet of telling your origin story on the show. If you'd be so kind to just tell us how you got into comics and then where Samurai Cicada came about.
Got it. I think I have kind of a unique story there in that I never grew up reading comics. So I wasn't, I don't have that thing where, you know, I kind of had a favorite comic from when I was a kid or the moment where I found my people as a child, you know, as like a teenager, like someone handed me a comic and was like, you got to read this, you're going to love it. And I was like, get the fuck out of here. And then it totally changed my life. Like, I don't have that story.
Yeah.
So I'm a TV producer by, you know, my day job, and almost entirely unscripted stuff. So reality TV.
Okay.
And about 12 years ago, I was one of the co-executive producers of Comic Book Men.
Oh.
And
okay.
So I'm actually, it's funny because I, you know, right before this, I'm in my car, just to explain to everyone, because I was at a house where I had Wi-Fi and then their power died and I had to drive to a parking lot. I'm actually like two blocks away from the Secret Stash right now in Red Bank, New Jersey.
I love that right store. Where
yeah. It's a great store.
Yeah.
Right where Comic Book Men was filmed. So that's where my origin story happened.
Wow.
Just a few blocks away from where I'm sitting right now. But I was basically in the shop, you know, making the show and listening to these guys kind of debate these things that happened in comics from when they were kids. And they were so enthusiastic about it. I was always a dorky kid, but not just comic books wasn't my geek thing. You know, my geek thing was TV. I watched a lot of Star Trek as a kid, and I watched like Buffy the Vampire Slayer and X-Files,
right.
You know, sci-fi and stuff. And then I was in the shop all day and I started. So the first comic book series that I read was in the Secret Stash, and it was The Walking Dead. So that was my first. I didn't start with Batman. I didn't start with Superman or Spider-Man or any of like the typical things I think people start with. Right. I started with an indie comic that was kind of like a zombie story. You
the
know?
big indie comic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So while we were making that season of the show, I read through the whole thing. I read Kevin's run on, you know, Batman Widening Gyre and Cacophony.
Yep.
I read his Green Hornet. And then I started working my way backwards and reading all the books that became the movies I loved. I loved the X-Men movies. So I read all of Chris Claremont's run on the X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I read The Watchmen. I read From Hell. I read all the Frank Miller Batman. That was my first Batman stuff.
Nice.
So, you know, I kind of worked backwards. I was like into the movies and the TV shows, and then I worked backwards to the comics.
Chris had the biggest smile on his face because Comic Book Men is one of his favorite things of all time. And I'll be honest with you, when we get people that work on TV and movies that come on the show, we don't research that part of you guys. So we know about like the comic shit, but then when that pops up, it's usually our first time hearing about it on the show. So.
I know it because I follow Blue Juice from the origin.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I know about you guys being on I Sell Comics, and I listen to Tom, Steve, Dave every week and all that. So I love your guys' origin and how you all came into comics. So, yeah.
Well, one of the things I wanted to do on this, actually, one of the people who did one of my four covers for the book we're talking about today, Cicada Samurai, was Walt Flanagan, who's one of the stars of Comic Book Men, one of the stars from Tell 'Em Steve Dave. He was the artist on Kevin's Batman stuff.
Yeah.
And he's done a couple of Blue Juice books. He's great. And his cover is gloriously violent and bloody and great.
Oh, of course. That's awesome. It's cool that you mentioned the Red Bank shop, because I luckily, for the first time ever, I had like a work trip maybe 10 minutes from there that I got to go visit last year. And then I told Chris, I'm like, Chris, you got to get down there, dude. This is like one of the coolest shops. And then I think you went this year, right, Chris? Or was it last year? Recently?
Yeah, it was this summer. I went down to it was Middletown, New Jersey, because in Atlantic Highlands, Kev now owns the movie theater down there. And he did a live podcast, and I went down to the comic shop and then to the Tell 'Em Steve Dave studios and all that. Did the whole Kev Smith tour of Jersey. And
yeah.
Unfortunately, I never saw the old Secret Stash. I got to see the new one though, but it was still awesome. Yeah.
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 New Jersey is a great state.
Yeah. The old one was cool. And, you know, Walt was with me when I was with Blue Juice at MegaCon a few years ago. You know, he doesn't fly, so he drove down with Gidim all the way from Jersey. It was kind of funny.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a long drive.
That was a great book they did too. Was it Knights of the Fifth Dimension?
Mm. Oh, yeah. That's great. I love that story. It's really cool.
So let's talk Cicada Samurai the Samurai Cicada. How did that come about? Where was that idea from?
So I kind of worked like a lot of the I'm in a writing workshop right now that's part of Scott Snyder's Substack membership. Mm-hmm. And so for the last year, I've just been kind of absorbing, you know, writing information from that. And you know, I work in TV, I'm a TV producer, and a lot of the writing I've done for television, it's similar. You tell a story, you have a character, you kind of build a world around them. This kind of came backwards from that. I a couple of years ago, there was that Brood X of the cicadas, you know, the cicadas the gigantic kind of flies that make a whole unholy racket. There was a giant emergence of them 2 years ago in 2021. And so like everyone else, I was home because of the pandemic and I had a lot of time on my hands. So I started reading about cicadas and I just kind of got obsessed with them. And there are all these superstitious things that, you know, when Europeans first got here, they'd never seen a cicada. They thought they were locusts. They thought they were a plague sent from the devil. You know, their big red eyes because they're staring into the fires of hell. And so initially I just was like, what if all that stuff was true or some of it was true? So I had that, I was kind of noodling on that. And then I was, you know, in this workshop every few weeks with Scott Snyder and just listening to people like him, Kyle Higgins, just talk about coming up with their stories and how they do it. And I just started thinking about a character and I kind of came up with this. And, you know, it's a little bit of an allegory for my own life as a father. I have three kids, the oldest of whom is 12. He's 12 years old and he's starting to do more and more stuff away from us with his friends. And that's like nerve wracking. So this idea is these cicadas, they emerge after 17 years. So essentially they're teenagers,
right?
They get 3 weeks above ground. Think of that as like prom night. And they know they're going to die. They know they're going to die at the end of it. So they're all going to be reckless, you know?
Right.
And his job is the only adult, the only one who has any real world experience. His job is to keep as many of them safe as possible. Mm. And so he's kind of like a parent trying to keep track of these 17-year-olds, like millions of kids at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what the story is. So he's an immortal cicada who has to protect as many of his brood as possible to ensure that the species is around again. Because when these bugs emerge, like all animals and insects, all these things eat them and kill them. Just they're demolished. They can't defend themselves. They're just big dumb flies, you know.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's they're pretty terrifying to look at, but yeah, they are harmless when you do run into one. But I've been scared once or twice by one.
Yeah.
And the idea to like make them the samurai background, is that something you're always interested in yourself, or yeah?
I've always kind of liked old samurai movies, and then you know, old westerns, which are really often samurai stories retold in the American West.
Yep.
And then this, you know, samurai stories are often, it's like a single character, sometimes a group, seven samurai, who, you know, have kind of a charge, a mission, a code, and something they have to do that's kind of hopeless, but they're going to do it to the best of their ability anyway.
Yeah.
And that's, to me, is kind of what parenting is like. That's what being like a dad is like in a lot of ways.
Right. Right.
You know, like you're going to fail at it. You're going to see yourself fail in real time. It's going to be awful sometimes, but you have to still get up in the morning and take care of these kids.
Mm-hmm.
So that to me felt like a samurai story. So it just felt like this one lone immortal cicada.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's kind of where it came from.
I would love to hear about how you met up with your artist and the creative team here, because one of the things, even before booking this interview, I saw this book and your promo images and the interior pages and just everything art on this pops so well. with the colors and how it, everything's designed. Yeah,
Mary Landrieu.
I think it sells it immediately just to see the character and how everything's designed. So I'd love to just hear a little bit about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I honestly wish I had like a story where like I found an artist and I beat down their door, but but I got incredibly lucky. I had this idea. I was following artists on Instagram. I reached out to Takashi Okazaki, who did Afro Samurai, you know, this creator of that.
Yep.
And is a big anime and video game character designer and just like an immensely talented person who tells a lot of samurai stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I pitched him this idea and he just was like into it from the get-go. So I sent him a message on Instagram. He answered. I was surprised.
Wow.
And, that's amazing. And he agreed to do my first pass at character designs. Wow. Yeah, I got really lucky. Oh, he was like pitching me story ideas. He was like,
this is great. That's awesome. This. That's amazing.
It was very cool.
Yeah.
It was very cool. And then, you know, he's incredibly busy. So it took a long time to do the character designs, the initial pass at those. And he was never going to be able to do the interior pages. So I knew I had to look elsewhere.
Right.
And I found Mary, who has sort of an anime feel to her work, but it's also, she just loves drawing monsters.
Okay.
And so same thing. I reached out to her on Instagram and she had just done a Kickstarter of her own for something called Rich the Comic.
Mm-hmm.
And I just loved everything that she had posted. And then I was like, I want to do this thing. It's these humanoid things that the armor is what makes it look like what we know of as a cicada. Otherwise, they're kind of humanoid underneath. They have wings. They're a little buggy. They're greenish. They have six, you know, four arms and two legs, so six appendages. But I pictured the story and I said, there's going to be a lot of these big monsters that they're going to tear them apart. It's going to be very violent and very scary and like, ideally have some heart. There it is, nice and violent.
Very, very bloody.
And again, she just was kind of into it. Very bloody. I sent her Takashi's designs and she, you know, went to work on those and kind of redid them into her own style. Takashi's, when you get down to the covers, his main character also looked like one of the kids. And so we wanted him to look a little older. So we kind of aged him up. So he's the only one that looks like an adult. The rest of them look like, you know, 17-year-olds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Mary's cover is awesome.
But yeah.
Her cover. There's Walt Flanagan's
cover. Yeah, she's amazing.
And then Takashi's right here, which looks like it's going to be a wraparound.
No, actually, that's just the B cover. So I was like, I wanted one of the covers to kind of show his size, you know, because like Takashi just drew him by himself, so you really can't tell how big he is.
Okay.
Mary's first cover with him kneeling, you can't really tell how big he is. Walt kind of took him in a totally different direction and just decided he was like a grizzled, you know, gritty samurai murder story.
Yeah.
So if you look at that bloody beach, it's just like,
yeah,
he sent that to me and I was like, I fucking love it, Walt. It's just
really good. That's awesome. Yeah. That's amazing.
It definitely has Walt's sensibilities in it with the devil head right here and the pig mask. Like everything here just, from what I know of the man and the artist, is it's definitely his sensibilities right there.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. That's been the most popular cover. That's been the most popular one in the campaign so far.
It's crazy to have a Takashi cover too, though. Like, you know, to reach out to him and have him helping out with the characters, and it's awesome. That's really cool.
Yeah. He actually wanted to do a lot more. You know, when I go to series, he wanted to be able to do all the covers.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't know. He's so like, he's doing, he did a Marvel book, a Star Wars Visions book for Marvel recently.
Yeah.
He's got another big project that's kind of a larger interactive thing called Numb that he's working on. He's just too busy. You know, he can't do my little book.
So, let's just talk about, some of the, for the listeners and everything, the rewards that you have a digital version, which is always nice for people like me that are pretty much all digital now. So I always appreciate something like that, but then you have the separate covers, right? And then you have one that incorporates all the covers, I'm guessing. Right. Yes.
Yeah. There's a tier where you can get all four covers for people like to collect. I don't have a very big backlog of my own work to kind of add and make it bigger. And I didn't want to, I hit my funding goal actually pretty quickly. I was very lucky. I hit my funding goal in about 3 days. So I started making a list of stretch goals, And I just decided, like, forget this. I'm just going to put everything I had on my list. I'm just going to put it in the book now and just do it.
Yeah.
So it went from an 8-page story to a 10-page story. There's going to be pinup work inside the book. And then there's going to be about 10 pages of behind the scenes stuff, you know, inks, pencils, script pages, things like that.
I think everybody
gets that.
That's cool.
Whatever version of the book you get that.
I think one of the interesting things you're offering, I don't know if I've seen this really on a lot of Kickstarters, is these metal prints of a cover of your choice. Can you talk about those a little bit?
So that's actually a company that Mary owns. So the art, the artist, my partner in this, she's so funny. She's like, she's getting married right now. She's actually like at her wedding this weekend. She is only 23 years old. She's so young. She's so talented and she's incredibly entrepreneurial. So every time she has an idea, she starts a new company. So she's got a company that makes like cake toppers and table toppers. Wow. She's got a company that she does the comic book stuff. She does art. She does like other art for other projects. She does art for advertising campaigns. She bought this. She has this giant laser printer that I'm pretty sure is in her house in Edmonton. And she prints her own work on these, you know, 10th of an inch thick sheets of metal.
Wow.
And then goes to a lot of cons in Toronto and she cleans up. Like they're very popular and it's a very cool kind of unique thing. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to do that. So I picked two sizes. And so you can pick any of the four covers that you like and she will laser print it onto a sheet of metal. You can go, I think it's 11 by 17 or 24 by 36. And those will ship directly from Mary to, you know, the backer, whoever buys them. So they'll come directly from her house, I guess. You know, where she's making them.
Well, that's why it's so unique because I've never seen that.
But before. That's what it is. It's actually. Yeah. Yeah. And I had to like rewrite that part of the campaign a few times because when you say metal, everyone thinks it's like a foil trim cover or like an aluminum thing. Like, and I'm like, no. Like, we're going to send you a sheet of like hard metal. Like, you could side your house with it if you really wanted to, you know, a sheet of aluminum.
That's insane.
Yeah. I was thinking
I separated it out.
Yeah.
Cause I was thinking when I said it would be like a thin piece of metal, I have a few around the house where it's like an image on a thin piece of metal that you get at cons and stuff, but obviously it's not that. So
yeah, that's why it's definitely different than what we've seen before. So that's cool. That's always nice to have something unique. So this is issue zero for Cicada Samurai. Now, this isn't your first time writing the character, right? Or is it?
No, it's the first one. So it's sort of I called it issue zero because it's only a 10-page story. It's a short story and it kind of introduces the world and the character. And basically based on the reaction to it, I didn't want to start by doing like a 40 something page, you know, two chapters of the big story kind of a thing.
Yep.
For a lot of reasons. The main one's financial. It's very expensive to do that kind of art without knowing if anyone cares about it. So I wanted to kind of, it's also my first time doing this as a publisher, as a writer. So I wanted to kind of dip my toe in, do something smaller, see if people kind of reacted to the art and the character and the story. And then, you know, based on, it's been pretty positive. So, you know, my goal now is I have a 6-issue story, like a mini series planned out that I've outlined. I've started working on that script. And so I'll send that to Mary, you know, before the end of this year and sometime early next year, there'll be two issues of this story, you know, probably also on Kickstarter, unless I can get a big publisher to pick it up.
That's awesome. I mean, everything surrounding this campaign just looks really great. I love the art. You're so lucky to have some great cover artists to jump on as well that really add to a pop effect for it. It's just fantastic. I really look forward to seeing. I think this is going to be a blast, like a very successful. It's got everything you want in a comic, as far as I'm concerned.
I already backed the digital, just a shout out there, but as this episode drops, I think we have a couple days left for all our listeners and our viewers out there, so check it out. It's something that Chris and I don't generally look at Kickstarters ahead of time. We're like, yeah, shit, man, we gotta talk to Jerry, but like, you know, I think we're both going to be actually reading this book, so just because of how many comics we have to go through. But yeah, Jerry, thanks for taking the time. We really appreciate you being here.
Absolutely.
If our listeners and our viewers want to follow you and all the stuff that you're talking about, where can we send them?
So I'm on Instagram and Twitter at Thorny Comics. I'm on Facebook. I have a Facebook page set up that's also Thorny Comics. I'm pretty sure I'm the only Thorny Comics kind of on any of those platforms. Mm-hmm. And then the Kickstarter campaign, if you just go to Kickstarter and you search Cicada, it's the first one that pops up. It ends on Friday, October 13th at midnight.
Great.
And I'm going to make it even easier on all you fine folks out there listening and watching, because you don't need to search for anything. You can go in the show notes and click on the link and it'll send you right there, as always. So make sure to do that and check out the book, because I guarantee you, as soon as you see that first image, you're going to be sold.
Yep, easily.
So, Jerry, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Yeah.
And we definitely look forward to hearing from you in the future, man.
Thanks.
Thank you. Maybe next time, I hope I'm in my office and not driving around looking for internet.
And we're back.
We're back. Samurai Cicada, A New Story Begins on Kickstarter now. I know it's something Chris and I are really interested in, so you should be too.
Yeah, it looks really dope. That first image you see of it just sells it right there. Yep,
for sure.
Yeah.
This is interesting. Radio Black has become more and more of like a meme at this point than anything. Image Comics announced that... When's the last time we've had a Radio Black issue, Chris? I can't even remember.
I'm still kind of... I'm behind on a lot of books right now.
Okay.
And the Radiant Black universe is one of them.
Yeah.
Because I have... And so this is a me problem. I have to read the books in the order of how they came out.
Mm-hmm.
So... And this is a thing... Marvel and DC do this, and this is why I'm behind on Moon Knight as well. When they come out with, like, oversized issues...
Right.
It puts me at a halt. I don't know what it is. I know it saves me money technically, mm-hmm. but like I would rather you came out with that over 22 pages so I could read them regularly.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the Infernal Girl Red, which is really good. I think I'm on the last issue of it,
mm-hmm.
and it's got me at a halt because I've got so much I'm trying to catch up on in my reading that I'm way behind on Radiant Black.
Well, I can't remember the last issue when it came out. It's been months for sure. And I'm guessing it's all stopped because now we have this news. Radiant Black number 26 will have two issues. There it is. Some spoilers ahead of issue 25 for that. Those that have read 25, they know that there's multiple endings that have each lead character take the mantle of Radiant Black. Issue 26 and 26.5 will follow both endings to show a branching timeline that will continue to issue 30, plus fans will get a chance to vote on who should keep the Radiant Black mantle and revealed in the later issue. This is becoming too much, Chris. Yeah. I'll try to keep up with it, I guess.
I'm going to disagree with you. Yeah. I love this.
Yeah, okay.
I've said since Radiant Black started that Radiant Black has filled an invincible sized hole in my heart.
Yeah, that's true. It does do that, I would say.
And one of the things it does is these fun little... It's not doing the same thing that Invincible does, where Invincible was like almost poking fun at superhero comics,
mm-hmm.
where this is more of a celebration of superhero comics. But it does these things like this that, I don't know, it's a cool idea to me. Like, instead of Marvel telling me, hey, this, even though we could split it into, you know, Peter Parker could be two different people, but who's the real one or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and let the fans kind of decide, they just say, no, this is what we're doing. And this is a risky maneuver, because I think more people are going to feel like you than me on this, where they're like, I don't know if I want to buy two books a month on this. It seems like a lot. Even though it's only 4 months, but I think it's cool. And it's this news geared me up to want to catch up on all my Radiant Black Universe stuff to get to this point so that I can talk about it on the show and be like in the moment. So for me personally, I think this is really cool.
Yeah, I think so. Like, the way issue 25 left off, because now I'm flipping through my book now, Marshall takes over the mantle. Like, they decide, the whole issue revolves around Nathan and Marshall deciding on who should take up the mantle. So, 25 ends with Marshall taking it, and then the big bads arrive, and, the war is going to start. So, I guess this is the start of the Catalyst War from the image, but also it sounds like they're going to be fighting for... They're still not decide on who's going to take the mantle yet.
Yeah, so they're going to let the fans kind of decide that, which...
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying Marvel and DC have never done this. I mean, we've done DC fans voted to kill Jason Todd.
Yep.
This stuff has happened before, but I don't know. It's just something that doesn't happen often and feels like Big Two, especially, have kind of moved past.
Mm-hmm.
So I love it personally.
The last issue was out in July though, so it's pretty big delay.
That was the last time an issue came out?
Yeah, issue 25 came out in July of this year, so it's been at least three. Because just seeing this news, I was like, oh shit, yeah, we left off on the war happening, and then they kind of stopped. Yeah, I haven't read an issue since July.
That's a big delay.
Yeah, so I feel like you, Chris, where now I'm I caught up, and it's now it's a big gap here. You have this time probably to catch up, because... It's crazy that the
because I think this is starting either December or January, or in October.
That's so crazy. Yeah, that's 4 or 5 months.
I guess I'll throw the criticism out that that's not acceptable.
No,
it's not as bad as what Saga has been doing, but it's in that realm.
True, but they could at least came out and be like, okay, this is the end, a hard stop for this arc. We're going to continue an arc in 3 to 4 months, but they didn't say that. They're like, next issue is the war, the Catalyst War, which is what we've been building up to for 25 issues. So,
which makes me think too that there's going to be another delay in between, because I think that this ended at 30, right?
Yeah.
This whole story thing. Yeah. So if we have till 30 to find out, or 30.5, to find out what's going on with who's taking over the mantle, then there's probably going to be a delay, because then they have to, even though I'm sure that Higgins has both stories where he can branch, they still have to be made.
Right.
Now he's going to have both books made and then just be like, all right, throw this one out.
You're going to be waiting on the art is what's going to happen.
Yeah. So there'll probably be another delay after that. Hopefully they're more open about it.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's neat, it's different, it's fun. I'm down for it, but it'll be cool to see. It'll actually be kind of interesting for the show that you will have already been caught up and had this huge delay, and hopefully I am catching up over the next few months
before that comes
and
out,
feel more fresh on it, and we'll see how the difference is. That'll be a cool little
I don't care about these guys anymore. I think the problem for me is because you just have two average guys taking up the mantle, and it's I haven't been consistently following them to be I want this one more than the other. So I think you really need to try hard to distinguish between the both of them.
Yeah, and I also didn't kind of care for the two people having the mantle at the same time.
Yeah, they're not that one took over because he was in a coma. So he was had the mantle as a necessity, right? So
When they were splitting it too.
Yeah.
Even though there were some cool moments with that where one had half the suit and the other had the other half.
Right.
It still just kind of fell flat for me with a lot of that. I don't know how much that keeps going in the issues I haven't read, because I couldn't tell you where I stopped.
Yeah.
But it's this I'm excited for this personally, but
Mad Cave Studios announced that they're launching a new Dick Tracy comic series alongside IP rights holders Alex Segura, Michael Moreci, and Chantel Amy Osman. The new series has pursued for years by the rights holders and now is becoming real with new adventures and super sly takeover of nostalgia. Dick Tracy will be written by Alex Segura and Michael Moreci with art by Geraldo Borges. Cool. Yeah. Not a huge Dick Tracy fan. I don't know much about him, but this is cool, I guess.
Neither do I.
Okay.
And Dick Tracy's kind of I know of Dick Tracy. I know of the movie.
Is it like a James Bond or something? I don't know.
It's a PI, I guess.
Okay.
A detective kind of thing set in the 50s.
Interesting.
You can tell by this. I mean, I think this promo image is fucking awesome.
Personally. Yeah, it's pretty sick. Yeah.
But just the watch he's using, how like old school it looks.
Uh-huh. That's cool.
I mean, so full, just to be honest with the audience and everything, we'll probably get this for free. So I will check it out.
Yeah, we will read it no matter what. Yeah.
If I wasn't getting it for free, I don't know if I would or not. I think it's a cool concept. I think it's a cool announcement, and good on Mad Cave for this. Like, I've loved what they've been doing these past 4 or 5 years. I think they've really picked up the ball that Aftershock fumbled. And I hope this does well for them, because it'd be cool for them to have a stable IP to work on while they're doing all these cool kind of side things.
Yeah, that's true. Because they don't really have this yet.
It might, if I was to pay for it, it would probably be one of those books that, like we'll talk about one later in the show, that curiosity gets the better of me and I check out.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have to worry about that, because we're going
to get a review copy. Right, because it'll be sent to us. So,
but I'll be excited to see what it's all about. What's going on?
Massive Publishing took to Kickstarter once again to fund their new title, Zorro, Man of the Dead. New series is written and drawn by Sean Gordon Murphy. You can back this Kickstarter for extra goodies and exclusive covers, but the series will also launch in comic stores in 2024. I haven't looked at the Kickstarter yet, but you can either pay, you know, probably $10 for a single issue, or wait till it comes out in comic stores and buy it for a reasonable price. Because that's usually how it goes. But
yeah, and there's some. I have checked out the Kickstarter. There's some cool exclusive covers. Joe Quesada does one.
Okay.
Adam Hughes, a bunch of big names. There's a like premium collected version you can get. There's all types of cool stuff you can get there that I don't know what will and won't be available to direct market. I will wait for direct market. My kind of philosophy for something like this, because the book will come out alongside the direct market.
Right.
So my feeling of Kickstarter is I should get something exclusive and before the direct market does.
Yep.
That's how I've always felt. If I'm going to pay a premium for something, I should be treated special, because my mom always told me I was.
Mm-hmm.
And
of course.
And also, this is something that I could get through my local comic shop and support them. And so I'd rather do that. But, you know, for people who want to go above and beyond and get these extra stuff, it's kind of cool. What I think is really cool, though, Mike, is if you do the digital version, they will send you the digital file every month.
Oh.
So you'll just get the digital file every month as it's coming out, kind of you know, so you're getting it alongside everybody else.
See, that's cool.
That's a neat idea.
Yeah,
I just personally believe that backers should get it all early.
The hardcover is $50 for
And then there's some like Masters edition or something. It's like 80 or 90 bucks.
Deluxe connecting cover set, $60 for 4 issues. Man, I don't know where we got to the point where these like books cost $15 for single issues on Kickstarter, but it really sucks.
Talking to a bunch of creators, the economy is how we got here.
Yeah,
it's costing them more to print, so
yep.
And they're not Marvel and DC, because I'm sure Marvel, when printing costs went up, went, listen, we're printing millions upon millions of pages every year. You really going to up the charge on us?
Yeah, that's true.
And if it is, it's like pennies, as opposed to like, you know, our good buddy Travis probably had to pay $2 to $4 more a book. So,
yeah, it's crazy too. Like, just shipping on the single issues is $10.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah. again.
Because I'm pretty sure they're a United States company and shipping inside the States, 4 issues or hardcover. $10 sounds right.
Yeah, and they have a whole pricing structure for the shipping. Anyways, yeah, like you said, it's coming out in the stores, so that's going to pique my interest more than this, I think. But it is cool they have some exciting stuff.
Yeah,
it's like, we'll talk funded about in under 30 minutes. Well, you had a pretty big name on the front.
Well, I'll talk about Plot Holes issue 2 later. Like, similar situation that was funded. I think that was Indiegogo, though, but still crowdfunded. And came out in the local shops, and I have no problem. I mean, that made a ton of money on crowdfunding, and now I'm getting it my local shop. If people want to support that way, they can. I mean, I have no grudges. I personally would rather send my crowdfunding money to those who cannot get their stuff printed, as opposed to a guy I love and Sean Gordon Murphy, who can just like walk up to any publisher and be like,
I want to do a book. Yeah. So it's just interesting. But anyways, yeah, it's up there. It looks pretty cool. All right, let's talk about what we read this week. I had some issues I had to catch up on. I read Blade number 3. Very good issue. There's the guy they need to find is on a fortress train, so that was a pretty cool development. And Doctor Strange showing up was cool.
The fortress train was a cool idea. I know it's been done before, but like it's always one of those things I like.
But Blade's gonna have to fight through guys on a train is like, okay, that's pretty cool. Shazam number 4. This is a wild issue.
Shazam.
Yeah. Billy, you know, he gets to the moon to fight this guy that he's been like tricked by the, you know, Gorilla Island. Like, okay, you have to help me. This guy's gonna like destroy Gorilla Island or some shit. So he gets there and he realizes he's been duped, and like the gods that are possessing him are all arguing. And he meets the Queen Bee, who's like the Empress of the Moon, and is kind of like is infected everybody to follow her and do her bidding. And he tries, like, Zeus takes over and tries to like put the moves on her, which is kind of funny. And then his siblings are back on Earth, getting ready to save him, because Billy speaks the words of Shazam, so he doesn't transform into Shazam. He's just Billy now, and now he's being attacked. So it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, in the gorillas coming up to the moon to then fight them, like there's a
cool that's true
there.
Yeah.
And I just love this through line through the whole story of the dinosaur lawyer.
Yeah, he's like, guys, we got to do the paperwork. And I'm like, but he did mention that like the auditors are going to show up if the paperwork's not done. So I have a feeling the auditors are going to be awful when they do show up.
Just a dinosaur lawyer. So a T-Rex dinosaur lawyer with a top hat and a monocle.
Yeah.
Just being like, God, like, we got to get the paperwork done. Like, you didn't save these people the right way. It's just, it gets me every time.
It's hilarious. Yeah. He comes back and I'm like, oh shit, this guy's still there.
Yeah.
I caught up on Batman Neo Gothic number 3. Amazing issue. You didn't reveal, thank you for not revealing, that the magic user learned from Constantine.
Yes.
That was sick. Yes. That, like, Court of Owls and Constantine, man, I wanted to just reach out and hug those Kelly and Lansing for that. I'd love to get them back on the show and talk to them, because that fucking reveal is like, it's got to be John Constantine. It's got to be. And it popped up. I'm like, dude, awesome. It just, like, they connect the dots so well.
And the reveal that not only did Constantine teach them, or the cat boy, but that he moved basically all of his curses onto him as well.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
It's so good.
That's a total Constantine move.
Yeah. Right as he's about to die, be like, now you're fucked.
Yeah, now you have my curses. Goodbye. Godzilla, Here There Be Dragons, number 4. This is the issue that really set this book up for me, man. I'm glad we got to this point. Like, this has made the series worth it. It's a great issue. We get the backstory of the pirates finding the lost treasure, Godzilla fighting Ibira. And then he ends up like getting into the water after destroying Ibira, like rips off his claw and like hits him with it and shit. That was awesome. And then he ends up fighting with the Kraken, and that's kind of where we leave off. And it's, you know, the pirate is telling the story as he's eating and drinking in front of all these guards, and it's kind of hilarious.
I need to catch up on that book.
Yeah, it's a
great issue. I love that first issue.
And yeah, this is the best issue so far, I think, issue four is. Yeah. And then the last book I got, I read a Kickstarter book right here. Nice Alex Ross cover, Comics for Ukraine. This was my first Zoop non-digital book. This is a specific to the war in Ukraine, the first printing. So this is there's a nice little like foreword from Richard Walden, who's the founder and president and CEO of Operation USA. Basically the funding for this book, a lot of it was sent to the refugees and like war effort in Ukraine. There's a lot of good stories in here. There's a story from Kurt Busiek that revolves around Astro City. A lot of people came back to bring characters back. So we have a Usagi Yojimbo story. We have a Chew story in here, like in a new original Chew story. Grendel is in here. American Flag. Gru the Wanderer. There's like an original Gru story in here. A Rocketeer story. The Rocketeer story was amazing.
I love a good Rocketeer story, man.
Yeah. So that was like, and then there's just some real, I will say this, like, there is some very, very, like, look at the art for this Rocketeer story. I don't know if you can, it's pretty nice, right?
Yeah.
Like, hold it in front of me. But as you would think a book that is helping a war effort would be, it's some very depressing stories, like dead family members, children dying. Really heart-wrenching stuff. There's some poems in here. There's some artwork. The back 4 or 5 pages are political cartoons. You can guess what they feature. I won't get into too much detail on the show because I don't feel like that's a place for it. But I was very pleased with the quality of this book. I mean, it's an Alex Ross cover, right? So come on. And Sal Abernanti, shout out to him. Big mm-hmm. effort for him organizing this too. So yeah. Well worth my money. Very happy with the quality, and it was a good read. Some nice little fun stories in there, but also some depressing stuff.
One of these weeks I would love to do, like, for an interstitial podcast, mm-hmm. I would love to do what do I normally call it, but like the list of books that like everyone should read,
yeah,
but like we haven't.
Right. Yeah. That we have never read. Yeah.
You know, like there's those books that every comic fan should know, which Watchmen and Dark Knight Return and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And for us to like take that and be like, these are the books are shameless. That's what I always call it. Our shame list.
Right.
Gru the Wanderer and Chew are on my shame list.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yep. I used to read, I read like the first 20 issues of Chew and then I've dropped off. I gotta get back into it.
I bought the first volume of that. That was during a time when I was like getting back into comics,
mm-hmm.
and I bought a bunch of volume ones of like indie stuff,
yeah,
to check them out. And then most of them I liked, but I never continued with them. Mm-hmm. And Chew was in that where I've read volume one, but I've never gone further than that.
Mm.
But
and then the last book I had this week, Chris. Probably the best one, and I hope you read it, because every like mini, oh no, not that one. I haven't gotten that one yet. So this one is DC Ghouls Just Want to Have Fun.
No, I did not read this.
Dude, you, okay, so I'll get you to read this book. So it's an anthology revolving around Halloween, right?
Yeah.
The first story has Gentleman Ghost.
I'll buy it tonight.
Yep. That's all I need to say. I'm like, you hear that? Do you know how well I know Chris? The first two stories, I kept getting more and more excited, Chris, because I was like, Chris is going to fucking love this. Chris is going to fucking love this. And I was hoping you read it, because the first story is Gentleman Ghost and also Montoya the Question.
Oh.
So it's the Question investigating Professor Pig murders, and it involves Gentleman Ghost. I was like, damn.
That's Chris phenomenal.
Yeah, I'm like, did Chris write this shit? The next one was a story about Entrigan and Green Lantern, like, teaming up. Was awesome. The next
Entrigan's always fun.
The next one was an Animal Man story.
Ooh.
With his daughter. Yeah. His daughter, like, goes out trick-or-treating, and he, like, follows her as Animal Man. It's a really good story.
DC, Give me another Animal Man book, man. That Jeff Lemire Animal Man was so fucking good.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Oh, yeah.
And then, so this is the last, so there was a few more that I didn't mention because they're, you know, they're okay, but like these are the top ones. The last one was Lobo dressing up for Halloween. Apparently Lobo has a daughter. I didn't know this, but he ends up dressing up like Aquaman because in our universe, Aquaman and Lobo look very similar. Well, it's this, you know, it might end up being the same actor eventually, but he dresses up like Aquaman and King Shark finds him. And he's like, Aquaman. He's like, fight me. So they end up fighting because he thinks he's Aquaman. And they're kind of like sitting back. His daughter's like, should we tell him that's not Aquaman? They're like, nah, just let him do his thing. Dude, it was such a fun, like the DC is like starting to get it. Like these anthologies, you can make them good and fun with characters that don't get pulled out a lot. And yeah, you got to read it.
Yeah. Lobo's daughter is from that Teen Titans run when Damian took over the team.
Okay.
I wouldn't recommend it for you. I don't think you would like it, but that's where she's from.
Understood. Thanks.
Yeah.
But that's all I had this week. I do have to catch up on Peacemaker Tries Hard. I got to read that one.
Quick book from last week. The Schlub number 2, which I really want to get you to read.
Okay. The Schlub. I'll put it in my notes.
Yeah, it's... So in the first issue, the like Superman of this world ended up switching bodies with a dude who's just like he's a loser. Like he's short, he's fat, he's, you know, divorced. He's his dental practice is like going under. He's just like lazy. He's a schlub.
I love that.
And in this issue, the Superman is in that guy's body. And that Superman guy has to go back to his home planet to like figure out how the machine that changed them works. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the dude in the Superman body is just like using the superpowers to get revenge on people who like shit on him throughout it.
Nice.
It's phenomenal. And then he like, and then the city gets attacked by this guy in a Zeppelin whose entire power theme is that he can change to different powers but only at partial power, and when he does, the symbol on his chest changes, so he gets like super strength, but it's like it's not quite super strength. So he can carry a bank vault, but he's like struggling to carry it. And he's like, when he gets the power of a bunny at one point, so he can like hop, and this is like the first thing he has to fight. And through all of that, he like basically destroys the town, and that's when this world's version of the Justice League shows up, called the Vigilant.
Nice.
He has to deal with that, dude. The Schlub is a really fun book.
I love that name.
Yeah, it's Donnie and Stegman's KLC Press.
Okay,
and Stegman's actually writing it.
Oh, cool.
So it's got like, if you follow Stegman at all, he has a sense of humor that like goes alongside mine, kind of that goofy so
cool,
people should check that out. A quick Kickstarter book that I'm going to talk about more on my Substack, but Star Noir book 1, book 2 is on Kickstarter right now. It's my spotlight of the week. Mike, just look at the cover.
I know
you know why I bought it.
It's right up your alley.
It's a 40s detective who ends up getting a partner that's a gray alien.
Yeah.
Well, so the 40s detective comes across this like very brutal murder, and he has to solve it. And he's that like that detective where something went wrong, and he no longer has a partner, and you know he doesn't want a new one. And, you know, that story. Mm-hmm. But when he gets a new one, it's this short dude, and he finds out that it's actually a gray alien who can like look like a human to everybody else, but he can see him. Uh-huh. It's a cool story. If you like that, if you like classic noir detective stuff, it's a cool little twist on it.
Awesome.
And the art's really cool, and it's 52 pages. So big book. Peacemaker Tries Hard, number 6, the last issue, sadly, of the series.
Oh, man.
But we get a big... This issue was... So this series as a whole was very funny and over the top and had some goofy stuff. This issue was very touching and sentimental in a lot of ways. So we get the big fight with Chemo, whatever we want to call him.
Yeah.
And the way they kill him is really funny. I won't spoil it, but Red Bee sacrifices himself to take him out.
Okay.
And Peacemaker and Bruce Wayne, the dog, end up escaping the island that they're on. And when they go back, you get this moment where Peacemaker goes to Red Bee's bees and all of his hives and decides to take care of them for him and like cracks a beer for him because they were supposed to have a beer when they finished the mission, which is like a really sad moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then it flips forward more into the future, like by a week or so, and it's Peacemaker's birthday party and everybody shows up. So like the Suicide Squad shows up and nobody wants to be there, but Amanda Waller's making them because he saved the world.
That's funny.
And Kid Deathstroke or Teen Deathstroke is living with Peacemaker and is like watching his porn that he found. And then the Demolition Team shows up to like break it up and everything. It, all in all, awesome series. When this comes to trade, everybody should definitely check it out.
Mm-hmm.
And what's been cool about the DC books this week is there's also, at least the physical ones, I don't know about digitally, there's been previews for the Wesley Dobbs Sandman book.
Yes, I am very excited for that book.
Yeah, so I had already pre-ordered this book, so I didn't read the preview, but I was flipping through the art, and oh, man.
Yeah, it looks so good. I'm excited
for that book.
Dude, we're getting a Wesley Dodd Sandman. We're getting an Alan Scott Green Lantern book. Yeah.
Yeah.
Times are good.
Oh, no. Books going everywhere. Comics everywhere. I don't talk about Star Wars books often, but when a new number one comes out, I like to mention it. And we've got Star Wars The High Republic, Shadow of the Starlight.
Mm-hmm.
This actually, I don't know if I would recommend this to many people because this takes place after one of the novels where there's this Starlight satellite base that they created. It's supposed to be the shining beacon of the High Republic.
Uh-huh.
And it gets destroyed. And this kind of takes place after that where they're trying to figure out what to do. And they're basically doing reconnaissance because they feel like they're going to go into war.
Mm-hmm.
And all the different intricacies that go with it, like how to treat younglings at this point. Like now they need to go through in-depth lightsaber training early because they feel like they're going to be at war and all this. Yoda is a main character in this, which is really fun.
Wow, that's cool.
So for big Star Wars fans, this is a really cool book. But I think it'd be really tough for someone jumping in to do this one. Mighty Barbarians number 6 is the quote-unquote end of this book. I think they're going to continue it because it definitely sets the for an ending. But, like, yeah, they defeat the big bad. They save the world, and they get all the different orbs and decide, like, what to do with them. So everybody's going to hold one of the orbs. But there's kind of an epilogue where the person who brought them together is like, we saved the world, but like somebody was behind it and we didn't stop that person. We just stopped the event.
Mm.
And we ended up finding out that the person behind it is the God of Mischief, which I think is just going to be their version of Loki.
Yeah.
It looks similar, but it's not quite Loki. But yeah. So really cool book for like barbarian stuff. 007 for King and Country number 5. Another good 007 book. I won't go too much into it. It's a lot of 007 shit. We're saving that for last, Mike.
Oh, boy.
The Plot Holes number 2. This gives us more backstories and some of the characters we got, like what book they're from.
Mm-hmm.
And then what was really cool about this is they go to this book to try to save it from the big bad, who they're calling the Bookworm, which was, you know, really fun kind of thing for the plot. In a Revolutionary War book, so they're in 1776 Revolutionary War times when they have to fight this thing. And the big reveal for this is that the new character that they introduced to the team is supposed to be replacing somebody who died.
Uh-huh.
And he's not really feeling like he's going to live up to the mantle. And that's when they figure out that the bookworm they've been fighting, because they like snapped a picture of it or something, is actually that guy who died. His face is in the middle of it. So now they're like, oh shit, we're fighting our old friend.
Interesting. So,
it's a really cool book. I think people should check it out. And it's John Gordon Murphy's art. So,
oh yeah, it's good shit.
A rare horror book for me, Mike, but The Midnight Show, number 1 from Colin Bunn.
Nice. Yes.
So this is about a horror director who's like the creme de la creme, and he creates this movie called The God of Monsters, where he brings basically all the Universal monsters together in one big movie back in the 50s or 60s. And as they're filming it, the set just like burns to the ground and everybody dies.
Oh man.
So it's like this cursed movie. And we come to kind of the present where they finally are able to bring it together and show it. And they show, like, throughout it, they're showing scenes from the movie and they're showing the real world when things are going on. Well, the curse of this movie is that all those monsters are transported into our reality. So Dracula shows up and we get a wolfman at one point and a sea monster and all these things. And yeah, so as the further they get into the movie, the more these creatures enter our world.
Mm, cool.
It was a really cool intro. Like those Universal monsters are always fun.
Yeah, that's cool. That's awesome.
So yeah, I'd recommend it.
Sounds like a cool concept.
Gods, number one, Mike.
Oh yeah?
It came out. This is a hefty read, everybody. We're basically introducing new gods to the Marvel Universe in this. And the one we're introduced to here, he seems to be a god that like cleans up things. Like when a demon enters our realm, he cleans it up. He gets rid of it and things like that. And he's worked alongside Doctor Strange and a few others. And we also get this. He has a wife who's in this organization. And we find out this organization can also turn normal people into like demigods and basically make them immortal. And because this guy's so powerful, she has to divorce him to rise up to this mantle because they're enemies. And then we kind of, it goes back and forth in time because that happens in the past, and then we're into the present where there's some sort of event that's going to happen that's going to end the world. And everybody's kind of freaking out about it. And he just leaves and decides he's going to take care of it on himself. We go through this different journey with him through going to different characters to find this one book that when you read it, it just erases your mind as you read it. Mm-hmm. And that's how he ends up saving the world.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was a fun book. It's a one-shot comic. Very long one-shot comic, and as you read past it into the back of the book, every issue of this series is going to introduce a new character. So I think anybody could pick it up. There's not really anything like deep and into lore about this. Most of the characters are new. The ones that aren't new that are introduced, I feel like you know at this point through pop culture, like Doctor Strange. But I'll be interested to see because it's a Hickman book. So my question is, where's it going?
Yeah, right. It'll pay off in 60 issues.
Yeah, but the art's phenomenal. The story's really cool. So I definitely recommend it.
Nice.
And then the book that got the better of my curiosity this week was Transformers number one.
Nice.
Daniel Warren Scott. We're both big fans of his. For me, it's unfortunate that he's stuck on a Transformers book, although I'm sure he doesn't see it that way.
Daniel Warren Johnson?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
It didn't move the needle for me.
No.
The art's phenomenal, but it's Transformers. There's something about Transformers that doesn't stick with me.
Doesn't do it for me.
Yeah. This kind of reintroduces them to the world. They've crash landed Earth. They've been stuck there for a long time. Somebody finds them, reactivates them. Decepticons.
And the story goes. Yeah. Every time.
Yeah. So it's beautiful art, but
yeah,
I'll be really happy when he's off this book personally, because I'm just not a fan. But I'm sure for him this is like a crowning achievement for his career, and he's really happy. So good on him.
Yep.
But I will not be continuing that series, Mike.
Yeah. Understood.
And then the last thing I read was I jumped into Department of Truth Volume 2.
Oh, nice.
So it's been a while since I read Volume 1, so I don't know how much you remember, but basically there's a department that where conspiracy theories, if enough people believe them, they become reality.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy's brought into it. Well, we get deeper into that where we meet the guy who fixes those things and how he does it. So like when the conspiracy for flat earth becomes real and there's an ice wall at the edge of the earth, he has to like manipulate through media and everything to get people to stop believing it so that it can go back to being a sphere.
Wow.
Which is what happened in volume one. So in this one, he fixes it. Okay. And we start this one with the Denver airport conspiracy.
If you know that yeah. one. Yes, I do. Yeah.
And they have to go down and fix that one. And then this guy takes the main character under his wing and brings him along. And that's when we're introduced to Bigfoot. We get the conspiracy of like Eastern religion and how it was created cultism and Satanism in the 70s and 80s. There's a ton of conspiracy theories throughout this. Awesome. But like, yeah, unmarked Black Hawk helicopters, Area 51 is brought up, so on. If it's a conspiracy, it's been brought up in this book. And it kind of extends that whole thing where this guy, we turns out he's a turncoat for this other organization. And it's because the guy leading the Department of Truth is Lee Harvey Oswald,
mm-hmm.
The guy who allegedly murdered JFK.
Yeah right.
And allegedly. The conspiracy behind him is that he was actually a CIA operative the whole time. Well, that created two versions of Lee Harvey Oswald in this universe. One that's the real guy who is just some dude, and then one that's a CIA operative. Well, this guy ends up telling our lead character, like, the reason I turned coat is because I am pretty sure that the Lee Harvey Oswald that's running the Department of Truth is the conspiracy version.
Mm-hmm.
And they explain why that's bad throughout this, because like the Bigfoots are these creatures that are created by imagination and that can cause like real problems for reality and all that. It's a really deep, cool book. And once again, kind of up my alley because I love that classic conspiracy stuff. Yeah. It gets into some like really heavy, like modern conspiracy theories too. I think my only gripe about the book is there's a few times throughout it where I think the letterer gets a little too fancy and tries to do things that hinder my ability to read the book.
That's always tough.
Yeah, but it's rare. It's not often. Most of the time, it's really good. So, I look forward to reading more Department of Truth.
Cool.
And I think I'll just check it out. So, Mike, that was everything I read this week. Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at Fortress Ricker on Twitter. Where can they find you and or the show?
You can find me at Fortress Chris on pretty much all the social medias and the show at FortressComics_ on Twitter. Also at FortressComicNews.com. Remember, everybody, if you want to support the show, like, subscribe, share, comment down below in the video version of this. 5-star reviews on the podcatchers and Patreon.com/FortressComics to go that extra mile. Thank you all so much for watching and or listening this week. We'll see you all here next week.
Good stuff.